It's Monday, February 29th. That's right, 29th. And this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the road to the White House reaches an important point. U.S. voters and the world want to know, how strong is Donald Trump's campaign?
I want to work with all of you together, with all of you, in order to restore and rebuild a new era in FIFA.
Can a new president lead international football back to the field of play? Also ahead, more awards for pop music stars to collect. It's all on today's International Edition. Hillary Clinton easily won the U.S. Democratic presidential primary in South Carolina to cement her status as the frontrunner and deliver a key defeat to Bernie Sanders ahead of the crucial Super Tuesday nominating contests. Clinton won the backing of almost three-fourths of Democrats who went to the polls in the first southern state to vote during the presidential primary season. The result was never really in doubt. The only question was whether Sanders, a U.S. senator from Vermont, could narrow what was nearly a 30 percentage point deficit in recent opinion polls. Clinton, the former Secretary of State and wife of a past president, has now won or tied in three of the first four contests in the Democratic primaries and has significant leads in opinion polls in many of the states that are set to vote next Tuesday. The South Carolina victory was notable in that it suggests Clinton's popularity remains very strong among minorities. Setting up this big string of voting states Tuesday is VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman.
Indeed, Jim, we have had four primary or caucus contests so far. There will be 12 on Tuesday, so a tripling in one day of everything that we've had up to this point. The big prize is Texas, but we could emerge on Tuesday night with a pretty good indication who the Republican and who the Democratic presidential nominees will be. Nothing will be guaranteed because with 12 states, that's still fewer than 25% of the states, or with the four from before, it's maybe a little bit more than that. But still, nothing will be absolutely decided on Super Tuesday, but we're probably going to have a pretty good indication. Hillary Clinton came out of South Carolina's primary, Democratic primary on Saturday with a very convincing win. And this came after quite a devastating loss in New Hampshire and a squeaker of a win in Nevada. So she is feeling much better about her campaign. And Super Tuesday has a lot of southern states where she is expected to really clean up and do well. And Bernie Sanders is expected to falter. So, yes, the Democratic race, we could have sort of a glide path for Hillary Clinton established going towards the nomination. And really the same for the Republicans with Donald Trump. Donald Trump narrowly lost the Iowa caucuses, the very first contest, to Ted Cruz, but he has been on an absolute roll ever since, and his victory margins seem to be growing bigger and bigger with every state. It's not entirely clear that he can win Texas, which is Ted Cruz's home state and home territory, but he might. He might sweep the field on Super Tuesday. And if that happens, it's really hard to see how the Republican Party would derail his nomination at that point. Marco Rubio had a terrific debate performance last Thursday and really tore into Donald Trump. And there were a few moments when it came to discussing the Affordable Care Act and other things where Trump seemed to be faltering. The thinking is that Trump was exposed as something of a lightweight on policy. But it's not clear that those who have rallied around Donald Trump are particularly concerned about that. They like his message. They like his attitude. They like the sort of fiery bravado that he brings to the race. And it's not clear that any one debate performance is going to derail him.
And when you begin to see candidates talking about their opponents in the other party, you get the sense that they're already establishing themselves as the presumed or eventual nominee. Hillary, of course, only has Bernie Sanders to deal with. Now she can go on the attack against Donald Trump quite easily.
Indeed, and she began that there will be no need for her to engage in the criticisms of Bernie Sanders that she did just a couple of weeks ago. And she can run a very sort of above-the-fray campaign when it comes to the primary process and really focus her guns on the Republicans.
Well, we look forward to the process as it moves ahead and looking forward to the results from Super Tuesday. Always super in our studio is our VOA Senate correspondent, Michael Bowman. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jim.
Up next, we have our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee, right here in Studio 22 to talk about the latest controversy surrounding the leading GOP presidential hopeful. Hi, G.
Hello, Jim. Trump got caught in this web of controversy surrounding first the Italian dictator Benito Mussolini and a white supremacy group whose former leader expressed strong support for the billionaire. Trump on Sunday retweeted Mussolini's quote that reads like this: "It is better to live one day as a lion than 100 years as a sheep." Now, this was relatively a smaller issue because it was a bit of an experiment by the New York-based blog Gawker. A blogger with that site created a Twitter account about a year ago, and she has been posting quotes from Mussolini and attributed all of the tweets only to Trump. But Jim, the bigger problem for Trump emerged when a white supremacy group's former leader showed support for him.
Well, of course. It's the reaction to that support that has caused a bigger commotion, right?
Exactly. Trump had an interview this morning with CNN, and during that interview, he flat out refused to condemn the former Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke's support for his presidential campaign. Now, when he was asked to clarify his response, he kept saying he has no knowledge of Duke or the group itself. And shortly after that, when the internet exploded with his response, Trump sent out this tweet: "As I stated at the press conference Friday regarding David Duke, I disavow." So it only took him a whole week to kind of disavow that group.
Well, what are the other candidates tweeting about this?
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders was quick to respond, sending out this tweet: "America's first black president cannot and will not be succeeded by a hate monger who refuses to condemn the KKK. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who is leading in the poll, by the way, retweeted that, which garnered many positive replies from both Democratic campaigns. It's also interesting to note that although Sanders has a history of supporting the civil rights movement and the African-American youth in particular, Clinton continues to be more popular among black voters. Jim?
Well, thanks for that wrap-up, G. She's on Twitter. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. I'm on there as well, at VOA Stevenson. And our program's account is at VOA_IE. By the way, if you like, check us out on Facebook. VOA Asia is the Facebook address, and I know many of you are watching our program. Thanks for joining us. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Is Donald Trump about to march to the Republican nomination for president? Our look at this pivotal point on the road to the White House continues with VOA national correspondent Jim Malone, who joins us to discuss whether the popular billionaire has enough momentum to carry him to that point.
Things do seem to be growing. The vote total in terms of percentage was up in Nevada from the earlier races, so he can make an argument that his base is expanding. And if you look at the exit poll information, who's attracted to him, he is showing a kind of broad swath of appeal. I mean, it's not just some religious voters. He's competing with those with Ted Cruz about those, but also secular voters, people interested in the Tea Party movement, people, of course, concerned about immigration. So Trump's appeal seems to be across the board right now, and it's setting himself up very well for the next very busy round of primaries on what we call Super Tuesday.
There seem to be some rumblings even now among Republicans that they're just not quite comfortable with Donald Trump and still looking for an alternative, perhaps in Rubio.
Yeah, this has been one of the most fascinating aspects of the rise of Donald Trump, the reaction of what we call the Republican establishment, whatever that is or still is, because they have seemed to be quite weak at this point. There is talk of ad campaigns targeting Trump with television advertisements to try to weaken him and so forth. There's talk about getting united around one contender, and usually that would flow toward Marco Rubio. Rubio, we should point out, has gotten some endorsements in recent days, and they would really love to have the endorsement of former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, his one-time political mentor. Even Rubio, I saw him talking about this, said as long as it's a crowded field, it's going to be difficult to make a lot of headway against Trump. And indeed, all the remaining contenders want to be that one person left to go one-on-one with Trump. But by the time we get to that, it could be far too late for them to have any real effect because so many states are going to be voting in the next 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Ted Cruz often talks about having lanes on the path to the Republican nomination, that he's in the very far right conservative lane, and he has that all to himself. I mean, do the lanes really apply at this point so much?
Well, a little bit in the sense of Cruz, who always wanted to base his appeal on what we call evangelical voters, Christian conservatives, but also sort of people who are very interested in adhering to the Constitution, constitutionalists in a way. Again, there's a lot of overlap in the Republican Party with these various designations, but if you have a crowded field, candidates always want to know what their base is. They can go from there. Well, Trump's base was a lot of disaffected Republicans, people who wanted a political outsider. He's been able to grow it. Cruz has not been able to grow it as much. And he's also gotten in, I think, some trouble because of allegations back and forth among several of the candidates that he's running a dirty tricks campaign. And this may be taking a toll on Cruz. He's had to defend himself quite a bit during some recent engagements. So Trump has not shied away from attacking Cruz on that. Right now, most people look at Rubio as the most likely, main rival to Trump. But the problem with Rubio is it's not clear what state coming up he might do well in. He would love to stay in until March 15th when his home state of Florida votes, which is a winner-take-all primary. But can he survive until then is the question.
Well, our own Jim Malone, VOA senior national correspondent. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Football's world governing body, FIFA, has elected a new president after its former leader, Sepp Blatter, was forced to stand down last year on corruption charges. New president Gianni Infantino faces a huge task in trying to clean up the body, as Henry Ridgewell reports.
Gianni Infantino won with a majority in the second round of voting, gaining 115 votes from the representatives of 209 nations. He pledged to rebuild the scandal-hit organization.
I want to work with all of you together, with all of you, in order to restore and rebuild a new era in FIFA, a new era in FIFA where we can put again football in the center of the stage.
Infantino won 27 more votes than his closest rival, the favourite, Bahrain's Sheikh Salman Al Khalifa. The Swiss-Italian lawyer was Secretary General of European football's governing body, UEFA. His former boss at UEFA, Michel Platini, was implicated in a $2 million corruption scandal that also swept away the former president of FIFA, Sepp Blatter. Both Platini and Blatter have been banned from football for 6 years. That opened the route for Infantino's shot at the FIFA presidency. Sports historian Philip Barker says Infantino has tried to reach out to smaller footballing nations.
He has also offered to expand the World Cup to 40 teams. A lot of countries are going to be greatly attracted by the increased prospects of qualifying for the greatest football show on earth.
Hours before the election, FIFA passed a set of reforms aimed at cleaning up its image. It will have an elected council to replace the tarnished executive committee, with more female members to boost women's football. The salaries of all senior figures will be disclosed, and the presidency will be limited to a maximum of 12 years. Many believe the reforms don't go far enough, says Barker.
12 years, there's still ample time for corrupt practices. Salary disclosure is another one that's a little bit difficult to pin down. What expenses they take, as well as the salary disclosure, that would be a real measure of just how transparent they're going to be.
US and Swiss prosecutors are still investigating, and the full extent of criminal activity in FIFA is not yet known. Gianni Infantino faces the task of restoring the image of a body that has become a byword for corruption. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at The Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on The Voice of America.
It's that time of the year again. The Oscars are upon us. Crews rush to finish preparations for the 88th Academy Awards. That's the movie industry's highest honors in Hollywood Sunday. The year's show is hosted by comedian Chris Rock, and he's been marked by a rather controversy regarding the lack of diversity among its nominees. For the second year in a row, the Oscars have just white actors and actresses chosen for the top four categories. That is, Best Actor and Actress, Best Supporting Actor, Actress. And the resulting backlash has led to several African-American actors and actresses, such as Spike Lee and Jada Pinkett Smith, saying that they are boycotting the event, and the rise of the social media hashtag OscarsSoWhite. Earlier this week, Rock tweeted a cryptic hashtag blackout, hashtag Oscars, hashtag. And that led to many to wonder what the comic might say during his opening monologue. We'll have to find out. The Academy Awards, also known as the Oscars, is held in the Dolby Theater in Los Angeles. The stars have begun arriving as we speak, and the ceremony will begin a short while later for the roughly three-hour program. More than 40 million people worldwide are expected to watch the ceremony. More awards have been handed out to some of music's biggest stars. For the inside details, we turn to VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald in our studio.
Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to meet.
The Brit Music Awards were held last week, and as the name implies, it's for British artists and those who enjoy much popularity there. Our very popular Ray McDonald joins us with the highlights of a very busy evening.
Hi, Jim.
Ray, I imagine there had to have been a standout winner.
Well, the British recording industry honored its top artists Wednesday in London, and it isn't really surprising who emerged the big winner, Adele. She's currently the best-selling artist in pop music. Her 25 album has sold more than 15 million copies since November, and Adele took home four trophies. 25 won British Album of the Year. Hello took Best British Single. Adele was named Best British Female Solo Artist, and she also took the Global Success Award.
With Adele receiving her much-deserved accolades, who were among the other winners at the Brit Awards?
One Direction took British Artist Video of the Year for Drag Me Down. Coldplay was named Best British Group. And James Bay took Best British Male Solo Artist. Björk from Iceland was named Best International Female Solo Artist. Justin Bieber from Canada took the International Male Solo Artist Prize. And Tame Impala from Australia was the International Group winner.
Hello, how are you? It's so typical of me to talk about myself. I'm sorry. I hope that you will. Did you ever make it out of that town where nothing ever happened? It's no secret that the both of us are running out of time.
No doubt there were performances and musical tributes.
As far as Brit performances went, Lorde probably was the highlight with her heartfelt tribute to the late David Bowie. She performed the track Life on Mars, backed by Bowie's band from his final tour in 2003. The internet erupted with praise, and among the admirers was David's son, Duncan Jones, who simply called it beautiful.
Ray McDonald, your host of VOA's Top 20 Countdown. Also, follow Ray on Twitter.
Ray on the hits.
Thanks so much for joining us, Ray.
You got it, Jim.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website, voanews.com, any time of the day or night. And you can also follow us anytime you like on Twitter. Our stream is at @VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Daryl Smith. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Thank you so much for being a part of our day and taking part of your day to be with us. Have a great one. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Legal experts from the U.S. Department of Commerce and the U.S. Customs and Border Protection collaborated with 20 senior officials from Sri Lanka Customs in Colombo in February on reforming customs procedures to enhance trade. The effort seeks to improve efficiency and transparency for businesses, allowing Sri Lanka to develop more fully its export potential and advance investment opportunities. The United States is working at all levels in Sri Lanka, government, private sector, and development groups, to help strengthen the economy for the benefit of all Sri Lankans, said U.S. Ambassador Atul Kishap. These reforms will send important signals to the trade community that Sri Lanka is open for business. The three-day workshop, provided in cooperation with the Embassy of the United States, will also better position Sri Lanka to meet its commitment under the World Trade Organization Agreement on Trade Facilitation. The sessions addressed issues key to Sri Lanka realizing its export-led development plan, including advanced rulings, valuation and classification, and customs appeals. In addition, the U.S. experts held a one-day training for 30 district court and magistrate judges who commonly hear customs appeals. Improving the legal environment for doing business in Sri Lanka fosters economic opportunity for local entrepreneurs and U.S. companies alike, said Megan McMillan, attorney advisor for the U.S. Commerce Department Commercial Law Development Program. She added, these ambitious reforms will strengthen Sri Lanka's connections to global supply chains while saving customs resources. These workshops are the first in a proposed series conducted in Sri Lanka in partnership with other U.S. government agencies. The United States is proud to work with its partner Sri Lanka to improve customs operations that will facilitate trade and economic development in Sri Lanka, the region, and the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage. www.voanews.com/editorials.